Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Knicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Obviously, I'm not broadcasting from where I usually broadcast. Can you hear the bounce? Can you hear the echo? Can you hear the windows? I'm surrounded by windows, and just beyond those windows is the coast of Florida and the Atlantic Ocean. I can look out and see the ocean. I'm up above the ground. I'm in a fairly fancy suite because I had to move up here. Yeah, it's a real problem. And it's fucking beautiful. I came down here as somebody. How's it going? I'm sorry. I'm being rude. I'm just going on and on about myself. How are you? Take a breath. Let's take a breath. All right? You all right? All right. So anyway, if you didn't know, I came down here to visit my mother. I got 2 weeks out from the second shot on the 22nd, which was her birthday. My brother moved down here, so I figure it's been over a year since I saw my mother. It's been almost a year since I saw my brother and his new girlfriend and my mom's boyfriend, the whole crew, my cousins, my uncle and aunt are down here. So this was the trip I decided on. But I don't know about you, and I don't know if it's within your financial abilities, but I also decided never to stay at my mother's house again. I don't know if any of you can understand the implications of that or what that means. But at some point I decided I don't care where I stay, just not in her house. And it's really the best decision you can make. I don't know what your relationship is. Even if your relationship is good, it's nice to be able to just, yeah, I'll be over there in a few. I'm leaving now. As opposed to wake up and be like, what's happening? Why am I 7 years old again? Why am I 10 years old again? Why am I acting like a 14-year-old? Why am I mad at my mother? I'm 57 years old. This is bullshit. I didn't want to wake up. I don't know what I want to do. Can I have coffee? Do you have coffee? You don't have coffee in the house? Seriously, you don't have coffee in the house? Holy shit. So I got to drive down. You know what? Never mind. I'm good. I'll go. Yeah. All right. You want to deal with that? Anyway, it's been okay. But I'll tell you more about it. Let's first, deal with what's happening on the show. Nancy Wilson is here. Nancy fucking Wilson is on this show today. Yeah, from Heart, from the rock band, from the mega rock band Heart. She's one of the world's greatest rock guitarists. She's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And oddly, after 40 years in the game, she's finally releasing a solo album this week. And it's good. I don't know what age you are or who you are, but Heart factored in, man. For me, I'm 57. Heart definitely factored in. I'm trying to think I think that first album came out in 76. So junior high, I mean, come on. Steamboat Annie, Magic Man, Barracuda. All those first two or three Heart albums were just on constant rotation on AM radio, FM radio, in my brain. I've got some memories, man. I talked to her about it. There was the drive, the famous drive, Mark Maron's famous drive. It was me, Dave Bishop, Chris Fisher, Andy Perot, two cars driving from Albuquerque to Denver, Mile High Stadium for Sunday Jam 2. Yeah. Chris was driving his Maverick, a white Maverick. I believe at that time I had the shit brown Datsun B210. Why we took two cars, I don't know. But we took two cars and we kind of like drove in unison the 10 hours to Denver. And I remember there was a disgusting, I remember I was working at the Posh Bagel back then. I was a manager. I must have been 16 years old. Point is, we had stopped at where I worked, because I was managing, managing a shift or two at this place. So I had the keys. It was a sandwich place. So we went in there before it opened, or maybe it was the night before, made a bunch of sandwiches, got, dressing, mayonnaise, all kinds of shit. Just stole it from the posh bagel. And, you know, I would offer an amends or an apology, but Eddie, the guy who owned the place, dead, been dead for years. So we got all this stuff in the cars and we're driving up there. And I just remember at some point between Albuquerque and Denver, Colorado, on those long strips of highway, there a food fight commenced between cars, to the point where both cars were just covered in fucking Thousand Island dressing and bullshit, to where we had to pull over and find a spray car wash to wash off the cars. I for some reason, I feel it was mostly my car, because I feel like I was the one at the brunt of things. I feel like that the container of Thousand Island was heaved to my windshield, and that we had to stop. Anyways, this is not the story. The story is we got there, Andy dropped acid, and we were on the field. It was Hart. Here's what I remember the lineup to be. It was Hart, UFO, the Rockets, the Cars, and the fucking Nuge, if that's possible. So we get there, Andy's tripping, and at that time at the top, I feel like I've told this story before, but it's relevant to me seeing, that was the last time I saw Nancy Wilson, and I'm going to tell her that. I'm going to see if she remembers seeing me in the crowd of 80,000 people. But Andy just watched, there was a giant statue of a horse that was on sort of on the edge, on the rim of the stadium back then of Mile High, and Andy was pretty sure that it was galloping around the top ring of the stadium. I didn't see it, but I'm not going to argue with him. And then there was the sad girl who was kind of wandering around drunk and, you know, kind of, you know, somehow managed to stop at our little blanket and throw up. That was memorable. I have no recollection of the performances of any of the bands. All I remember is, you know, we had to keep an eye on Andy and that this poor girl threw up all over our stuff. Great times, huh? Remember high school? Man, so I got here a couple of days ago, and my mother has a new dog, a new little weird Shih Tzu looking thing called Perfect, who bit me twice and does not stop barking. Again, always, if you can, stay at a hotel or an Airbnb of some kind, as opposed to your parents, which is the French pronunciation of parents' house. This dog would not shut up, would not stop barking, but it was nice to see Mom. Her boyfriend John's been on good behavior. Some of you know him as Jazz Guy. Hey, what's up? How you doing, good guy? Boop bop bop dee. What's up? How you doing? Toby, what's this? Toby, what's this? Toby, what are we doing with this? What's it? How about this, you guy? Booka booka ba. Bizzy da. Jazz Guy John is he's good. It was okay. I actually had the fucking spin out. Cranky John actually had to tell me to take it down a notch. I thought I was fucking handling it, man. I thought I was handling it. I was. I'm not going to, you know, I mean, it was actually good to see my mother. I don't know what's gone on in the last year, but I feel a little peace. I feel a little peace with all of it. I guess what we all went through and what I went through personally, maybe it just kind of, maybe the meditation. That's what I thought, man. I got to my mother's house and this dog wouldn't stop yapping. And it was a fucking, it just was nonstop. John walked me around the garden to show me, you know, how he's fixed everything up. And he's, you know, basically, he's almost kind of like cleaning, you know, the bricks out there with a toothbrush. He's very compulsively into managing the grounds of my mother's small house. Looks lovely. And, you know, God bless, 83 years old, something to do so he doesn't lose his mind. Terrific. But I was very amazed at how level I stayed, how level I was like, hey, it's good to see everybody. Look at that dog. It won't shut up. Didn't bother me. I thought meditation is paying off. That deteriorated. It deteriorated. My brother, we made plans to go out to dinner. My brother and his new girlfriend live up in, you know, they're about an hour from here. And we're all going to go out, and my brother makes the time, 6:30, and I make the reservation. Then I didn't know if John wanted to come, and I changed the reservation and finally got everything all settled up. And then about an hour before, Craig, my brother, he's like, you know, we're going to be late because, you know, Julia's picking up his girlfriend's picking up the kid. Whatever happened, but it was just sort of like, I was like, I don't want to be in the fucking middle of this, man. I didn't come down here to be a goddamn tour guide planner. Fuck it. You deal with it. You call Mom. And so that tone happened. Like all of whatever I thought I was doing well out the window. And I held on to it, sadly. I held on to it until we all got to the restaurant. I went the whole fucking lose my mind route. You know, I get to the restaurant at 6:20. We decided to keep the reservation. So Craig and his girlfriend, Julia, are not going to be there until 7. And I'm sitting there at 6:25 to meet my mother and John, who then text me. They're like stuck at the bridge. They're going to be 20 minutes late. So imagine a normal person would have just been like, well, this is what it is. It's okay. There's no hurry. Whatever. It's good. Not me. I texted my mother and said, this is fucking ridiculous. You're ridiculous. It's all fucking ridiculous. I don't need this shit. I'm probably going to leave tomorrow. I don't know where that behavior came from, but it's nice to know it's still in me. Isn't it? Isn't it? So Nancy Wilson has just released her first solo album. She is obviously half of the band Heart, but there's a bunch of people involved with Heart, but she's one of the Wilson sisters, and she's the guitar playing one, and she's a fucking monster on guitar. And it was kind of exciting to talk to her because I go so far back with their music. It's definitely woven into my brain for sure. So this is me talking to Nancy Wilson, and she just released her first solo album, and it's very good. It's a Nancy Wilson album. It's called You and Me, and it's out this Friday. And you can get it wherever you get music. This is me talking to Nancy Wilson.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
So it's so great to see you. I think the last time I saw you, and correct me if I'm wrong and tell me if you don't remember, be honest. I think it was at Sunday Jam 2. In Denver, Colorado, at Mile High Stadium. I could be wrong. I think it was you, UFO, The Cars.
Wow.
Ted Nugent and The Rockets. Is that possible?
I think that was right. That sounds like something that I could easily forget.
Right.
Could have forgotten.
Is that amazing?
Especially at that altitude.
Right.
Right. But yeah, one of the probably early, like what, 70?
Yeah. Seven, maybe?
Six or seven.
Yeah, exactly.
And Ted Nugent wore the tail.
I do want to say the new album's really good. And it's,
thank you.
I can't believe it's your first solo album.
I kind of can't either. I don't know. I guess I was just so stuck in the Heart vortex for so long.
Yeah.
Doing all that touring.
I can't imagine.
You know,
you're like a huge rock star.
I am.
You're huge.
Am I huge?
You were a huge rock star. I can't, like, I listened to Dreamboat Annie last night on vinyl.
Oh, wow.
In my living room.
That's a good record.
And, well, yeah, and I was like, holy shit. Because we're about 10 years apart. So
yeah,
I graduated.
I was just a little baby kid.
Yeah.
You know.
But when I was in high school, I mean, it's like that album was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Those first three or four records were everywhere. I mean, I graduated high school in 81, and it's just is sort of like, I remember listening to this in my back of my buddy's Camaro.
Yeah, Camaro.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, and especially if it was Barracuda in a Camaro.
Oh, man, it was so good. So that's what it was? You think you were just stuck? You had never sat down and had were any of these songs kicking around for years in your mind?
A couple of them.
Yeah.
One of them in particular called The Dragon was kicking around. Since
that's the best song on the record for my money.
Oh, you're right? You think that?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's got all the textures that, you know, you kind of do, but it's also, it seems like it's got like a kind of more like 90s Seattle thing going on in the rocker parts.
That's when I wrote it and where I wrote it.
Really?
Was interesting. Was in Seattle in the 90s.
No shit.
We came back from the 80s home to Seattle in the
90s. You came back from the 80s like it was a week. I came back from that week, the 80s.
From those 80s, that little roaring 80s excursion.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, we went to Seattle and we met those guys.
Who?
All the rock stars,
oh, yeah.
You know, from Seattle. my friend Kelly Curtis, my dearest buddy of all time, was managing Pearl Jam even before Pearl Jam was Pearl Jam. And when Andrew Woods from the previous version of Pearl Jam, he OD'd, and we all met up at this Seattle house. Kelly said, come meet my friends.
Yeah.
Come to see, you know, you're home now. Yeah. Come and meet these cool guys.
And they're all kids.
So, yeah, so it was, you know, Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Screaming Trees and, you know, everybody.
Lanigan
and Mark Arm and all those guys.
Mark Arm.
Yes.
Yeah, Mark Arm's funny. I've talked to him too. I love Mark Arm, but he works over at Sub Pop. Like if you order records from Sub Pop, he ships them.
He ships them from his house.
No, he works on the. He's in the shipping at Sub Pop. He like works over there.
Oh yeah.
Like he's an interesting guy. He really claims that. That he's exactly where he wants to be, that they did exactly the music they wanted and they didn't have any expectations. But man, those Mudhoney records are great.
They're great records.
Yeah.
All those guys, and all those people.
They must have looked up to you. You must have gotten there.
We thought they were going to think we were just old, stupid, big hair, Hollywood bullshit dinosaurs, you know. And we were wrong. We were happily wrong about that because, you know, they were like Jerry Cantrell was like... you know, he was like, okay, let's play, you know, we should jam, man, should jam.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you play the beginning of Mistral Wind? You know, which is so perfect because he's the king of dissonance.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like stuff like Check My Brain and I love his stuff. I love the Allison
But he wanted to learn the licks.
Yeah, he's like, how do you play that? And I'm like, wow, that's cool that you like that. You know, because they kind of like gave us the hall pass on the kind of the corporate 80s stuff and the MTV kind of
Weird because, I mean, what's astounding is how many hits you actually did have, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah, it's true.
But those 70s records, I mean, no one can touch those. I mean, no one can judge those. I mean, I listened to that thing and it was like just under the wire where the production was still clean. You didn't have those weird drum sounds. Everything had its place.
Oh, God, those drum sounds. You know, they were triggered.
In the 80s, you mean?
In the 80s, yeah. But the drum sounds when in the natural room.
Yeah, like Dreamboat Annie. Like, that was like, it was also clean. Even the synth sounded reasonable.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was an audiophile album, too.
Yeah.
As it turned out. And that little studio where we thought it was huge when we first went there to record, but it's little can base in Vancouver, BC was the room.
Vancouver, how'd you, like, I want to talk about this new record really quick because now who's singing with you on Daughter?
That's me.
Just you?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that I heard another voice under there harmonizing, no?
That was me kind of doubling and tripling and stuff.
Okay. And here's the surprise for me was you did Paul Simon's The Boxer.
Yeah.
With Sammy Hagar. I'm like, Sammy, it's not a rocking song.
It's kind of a folk tune,
It's a folk tune. How does Sammy Hagar end up on your record?
Well, we're buddies for one thing.
From
a while back, my husband Jeff and him are way back.
Oh, okay.
They're Bay Area guys.
Right.
From way back.
So wait, Jeff, your husband is in the music business?
He was in the film and music business, yeah.
Okay.
Music first and then...
What band?
No, he was a record guy.
Okay, cool.
First with a couple of different companies and then he was a Fox guy doing series and film and stuff.
Okay,
Fox.
Producing?
Yeah,
okay.
Producing and... music directing.
Jeff what?
Bywater.
Okay. So he's buddy with Sammy.
So he is old buddies with Sammy.
So you hang out with Sammy sometimes.
So I've done some benefits with Sammy before for his annual, you know, hospital for kids with cancer kind of thing. And, you know, he brings in all these like great players. And, you know, we've just do it almost every year. He's like, okay, dude, you owe me one.
Uh-huh.
I've got this album I'm working on. So... here's this rock song that it's actually not on the album now, but it's being used for sporting placements right now. It's called Get Ready to Rock, you know? And I said, want to put a vocal on? And he's like, that's just way too expected.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, well, what else you got? And I guess, well, what do you think about something really unexpected like The Boxer?
Yeah.
He goes, I love that song.
Oh, wow.
So, so his energy on that. I think it's really...
Yeah, it's definitely not how you hear Sammy Hagar usually.
Like,
the last time I saw him, I think it was on the Red Tour. When he would, I remember he did, what was that song, Bad Motor Scooter? Was it a Montrose song where he plays that lap steel? And he just, I remember him just sitting on top of this riser with that lap steel, just going, and I'm like, all right, what am I doing here?
He's incredible. I mean, there's only one of him. Thank God. I mean,
And the and also I like the tune that Duff and Taylor Hawkins played on. Now, how do you? Duff's a great guy.
Duff is a really great guy. So is Taylor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They both seem like really nice guys. I don't know Taylor. I've actually talked to Duff, but that song's that's a good tune. How'd you get those guys?
Well, I went and sang on Taylor's solo album before the shutdown on a song called "Don't Look at Me That Way," on his album, which is great, called Get the Money. And I said, okay, well, now I've moved up to Northern California now, and I'm starting to make a record because of this shutdown. So you got anything laying around?
Oh.
And he said, yeah, well, I've got this jam me and Duff did.
So that's their tune?
So that's their jam.
Oh, okay.
I took it and cut it into little pieces and spliced it back together and wrote the rest of it. You know,
oh, great.
Sang it. But It was an energy thing that I was looking for, too.
Yeah, no, it definitely rocks. You know? I mean, the whole album sounds clean. The production is nice.
Thanks.
There's some rockers, some folky ones.
I mean, it's
sounds like you.
It's home-baked productions, for sure, but it's...
Did you produce them all yourself, or did you have someone over there?
Oh, I produced it.
Yeah, you just sat at home and did it?
I just made all the calls. I just delegated. I had somebody recording it. Then I sent it to my guy in Denver, who put it in the Dropbox,
right?
Who then sent it to all my Seattle players, who then sent it around among themselves.
And that's how it was all put together?
And then that's how it was put together, all remotely.
That's crazy.
Nobody in the same room ever at the same time.
But did you Zoom with people, or did you actually?
No, we played a lot together in Heart, mainly.
Right.
And so...
Who did? Oh, your
me
band.
And all these guys in Seattle.
Right.
That I really know how to play. We've played a lot together, and we've played the whole last 58 shows on the Heart Tour together. So anyway, we had the unspoken language of just knowing how to play with these guys. And so then we went. It came back to me for the approval, and here's the notes I give, and then send it back to them, and replay this part or add that thing.
Yeah.
And so then back to me to approve this, and back to Denver to rough mix it, back to me to approve it.
Yeah.
And it's like, this part, this part.
Thank God we had the pandemic. You had plenty of time. You were hanging out, waiting to do it.
It took the whole year, you know.
So was it really born out of the time that you had because of this situation?
Yeah, I think, you know, being in a regular year in Heart, we would have been so busy and always playing catch up to where, so you're always late somehow for something. Or stuck in traffic somehow, you know. And being kind of shut in this new place that we moved to with an actual music space for my own self.
Yeah.
For the first time ever.
Oh, really?
I left all my guitars out, and I made all the racket I wanted to make, you know.
So you got a studio at home.
So, yeah.
That's great.
And just a little interface with six tracks.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine can run better than I can. But, yeah, just... you know, we cobbled it together.
Yeah.
But it sounds really good to me, like it was in the same room at the same time somehow.
It does sound good. And the amazing thing is that your guitar playing is like you. You're like, there's a couple of tunes, even on the opening tune, where you're like, oh, there's that guitar sound.
Oh, nice.
It's really amazing how, you know, some people have a, you know, it's so familiar somehow, but it's a feel that is uniquely yours, it feels like.
I love that because I talk a lot about guitar players, and when you know who it is, you know, that's a really cool thing.
It is.
You know their style.
Yeah.
It's, oh, that's David Gilmour, you know, or
you
know, that's exactly David Gilmour's playing. Nobody plays exactly.
But it's interesting because that's like you can usually hear it in leads, but I can hear it in your, you know, picking.
Yeah, I kind of approach it like a percussion instrument.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not shy with the acoustic.
Yeah, you know? It's great. What is
that? I beat the shit out of it.
That's good.
At times.
And it still rocks. That's like, that I didn't even recognize when I pulled that. I've actually got the mobile fidelity half speed master of Dreamboat Annie for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure where I picked it up, but it sounds so good. But like, they still have the label of that label that you recorded on that. What was it, Mushroom Records?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that label before. What is that?
You're kidding.
Well, no, I mean, I never noticed it before.
No, that was the Mushroom label that we first put out our first album.
Were they like a big label?
The little Canadian guys. Like, oh. They were just like a kind of a underground Canadian, you know,
okay,
Vancouver
so not,
label.
So how does it, but you guys are Seattle people.
Right. Well, we went to Vancouver because, originally because Ann fell in love with a draft evader who was in Vancouver.
Was he in the band?
He was the brother of the guitar player in the band.
So this band, like, because I know, I realized something last night that you and Ann and the sort of songwriting that makes that band, like the other cats in the band, they're great, but it seemed like, it felt like they'd been playing around like bars and stuff for a long time. Like there, yeah. I had this moment where I'm like, if it wasn't for these women, these guys would have just been a bar
kind of,
band.
Kind of a bar band. Oh my God.
Is that true?
Well, I guess I'd have to say yeah, but I mean, you know, that's not the best compliment you could give a band.
No, I mean, there's a lot of guys that like...
You guys are the ruffled shirts and stuff. You
well,
know?
Yeah, right. And then I saw a picture of, you know, I guess, who was the original guitar player?
Roger Fisher,
right. With playing the guitar with a bow.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, so... You know, that's sort of a Jimmy Page shingle. Like, it was something to me that, like, somebody who was trying to be somebody else would do.
Right. Kind of derivative, you know?
Well, yeah, but, like, you know, it looks good.
It looks good, but if it's Jimmy Page, it really looks good.
So how do you hook up with all these guys? How does that all happen?
Well, they had got a band sort of started with Ann as their singer.
Are you guys getting along right now?
We don't do a lot of... communication right now.
Okay.
Because we're both doing different projects.
But not because you're mad?
No, I'm not really mad.
Okay.
No.
I mean, you know.
Right. But it's a sister thing.
I get it.
But no, I love her. And, you know, there's a time for all things in our relationship.
Sure.
And this is just this time doing this
it.
And not
yeah.
doing that.
Yeah.
But they had a thing going with Ann. And they called it Heart. And then Ann fell in love and went to Vancouver. She hitchhiked.
So this guy splits because he's about to get drafted.
Yeah.
And this is like the early 70s?
He evaded the draft. In
draft dodger. He split to Canada. Old school.
Yeah. And so Ann followed him up.
Yeah.
And the band followed Ann because nobody sings like Ann.
Right.
So then when I took a year and a half of college before I knew I was going to join...
Mm.
The long-standing, you know, open invitation of all time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, like, not be the little kid sister shadow of Ann either. So
yeah.
I kind of got my, you know, I kind of opened some new doors for myself. And
like,
then I went up to Vancouver.
What'd you open?
I went to, like, creative writing stuff.
Oh.
I didn't even choose, like, a major. I took German.
Really?
Because the Beatles sang in German.
On that one song. Yeah, they...
A couple songs.
Right, there's a whole album of them singing in German, I think.
I think there's a few songs.
Yeah,
I know
for
that
sure.
Much.
Yeah, because for the German release, they did it of the, like the first or second record, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hold your hand. There's definitely a German...
Komm, gib mir deine Hand.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's true, right. That's what did it.
That's why I took
The Beatles
German.
Didn't make you want to play guitar. They made you want to take a German class.
Or both.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, so... The band really got going in Vancouver. We became the number one cabaret act in Vancouver.
Vancouver's a great town.
It's a really great town.
And also, like I'm not knocking Canadian music, but I could see, like, there if you rock in Canada, you're going to be celebrated. Do you know?
I know. I mean, we had big crowds that came to big clubs there.
Because, like, what was the other band? Like, Rush?
Rush, for sure.
Yeah, they're big
But then there was, like, Anne Murray. You know,
right?
And
Bachman Turner Overdrive,
BTO,
right? They're Canadian, I think.
Yeah. So we were, you know, we were big fish in little pond kind of thing.
But how long had you been playing guitar when you started?
I started when I was about 9.
Oh, so you play your whole life?
Yeah.
And Ann never played?
No, she plays.
She does.
She's
right?
a pretty good guitar player. She plays bass and flute.
Right. Okay.
You know, so
I couldn't remember if you guys did it on stage. If she plays,
she plays occasionally on stage. When her fingernails don't get too long.
So you guys grew up playing together.
Yeah, we had little bands. We recruited like girls from the choir. We had little folk bands.
Really?
We played at, you know, little people's parties and little, you know, many, many living rooms.
Were your folks musical or?
Totally, totally musical family.
Really? What were they, what did they do?
My mom played piano. Our dad was a singer. They're both in choirs. He was in a barbershop quartet.
Oh, really? Acapella crew?
Yeah. And then they had music all the time on the radio, on the stereo and on the reel-to-reel, like Barbra Streisand. They had, you know, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, Patti Page, you know.
Just music in the house.
Just music, classical music.
How many kids?
Opera there's music.
Three of you?
Three girls.
And
I'm the littlest.
And there's a middle one?
Anne's the middle, and Lynn, our oldest, is the oldest. And so we'd go around singing three-part harmonies all the time. Yeah, and our family, aunts and uncles and grandparents and cousins, we'd go to the beach house in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, do the campfire songs. And
And so what?
Ukuleles and stuff.
And what part of Seattle did you grow up in?
Bellevue.
Really? That's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, it's become a city now, but
it was big. Yeah, it was kind of industrial, right? Or kind of a suburb. There's water there, right?
Yeah, there's a lake or two around there. There's a lot of water, and it comes out of the sky all the time.
Yeah, I know. I've been with two loves of my life were Seattle women.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Did you ever live up there?
No, but I've been up there a lot. I used to go up there a lot. I definitely know Seattle, and I've done a lot of shows up there. I've always loved it. I always picture myself living in that part of the world at some point because it's really kind of an enchanting place.
It is enchanting. That's a good word for that place.
You know, because of that intensity of the weight of those mountains and those trees and that sky.
And when you go even more north into Vancouver, it gets bigger, like the gauge of the mountains and the gauge of the water.
I love Vancouver.
And the sky gets bigger too, you know.
I was ready to run. I wasn't sure if I was going to figure out how to get out of here. With the last 4 years, I was like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
I always thought about Vancouver.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden they closed. They're like, no Americans. And I'm like,
I know.
Oh, no, we're fucked. There's no getting out.
Oh, I know. I know. We were like, could we maybe think about moving to Vancouver?
You know?
They kind of made it harder.
They did, sure.
I tried to go to school in Vancouver, they changed it then because of the Vietnam War was happening.
Oh,
people were defecting to Canada.
Now it's because there's too much foreign investment. So they tax, I think they put a 15% tax on anybody buying anything
property-wise. Right, it's way more expensive if you're going to try to buy there.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I don't know what the border is like now with the COVID. I'm not sure. I guess things will start opening up.
I think they have to now.
Sure.
I mean, as long as they're getting their vaccinations on time.
Yeah.
Or in some timely fashion.
Sure. So what'd your dad do there in Bellevue?
Well, he retired from the Marine Corps.
Oh, Marine dad.
Marine dad. So my mom
three daughters. Wow.
Poor guy. Nobody to watch football with. And, but yeah, he kind of decided after his lifelong career in the military, plus his dad and his brother too, he retired as a major, and then he decided he wanted to take a total left turn and become an English teacher.
Oh, interesting.
So he went back to school, he became a teacher.
Yeah.
And he's wrote like short stories and he wrote cool stuff and, you know, we read out loud for the blind and did all these really cool things with his peacetime.
Yeah.
So, and a funny guy. I mean, you know, super funny.
Was he in combat?
Yeah, he was in some big combat. He was in Guam. He was in South Pacific. He was in some big action.
Big WW2 action.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feet on the ground. Running up the beach.
Yeah, boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground,
Running up those beaches.
Wow.
And, you know, not being able to talk about it ever again kind of stuff.
Really? He's like one of those guys? Like
PTSD, for sure.
Really?
You know, sometimes he'd wake up in a sweat and grabbing the poster on the bed and just like, ah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He saw some really nasty, horrible stuff, I'm sure. And,
I bet you that played into his desire to give back.
Yeah, I think so. He was going to be a more higher educated kind of person, you know, which there's nothing ever wrong with that.
No. And your folks are always supportive of the rock and roll?
They kind of really were. They were really cool parents. They they kind of got hip to the human potential movement of the late 60s.
Oh, yeah?
And became more like, you know, youth group sort of, you know, small groups and big groups talking about relevant stuff with younger kids and counselors. And so our house was like kind of like, all of our friends could come, and with the permission of their parents, they could party there, or have wine, or have a cigarette, or something else.
And groovy,
the groovy house,
groovy folks.
They adopted a lot of my friends, like Kelly, who I mentioned earlier, who did Pearl Jam forever. But so they got very groovy in the human potential era, and when I had gone to college a little bit and then came back and said, I'm going to join the band, you know. Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 19.
Crazy. So you're 19 and you go up to Vancouver and you guys, within a year, you do Dreamboat Annie?
Pretty much.
Wow.
That's pretty much what happened. Maybe it took about a year to do the clubs and to make the album and then release it.
To me, that album and certainly those first four albums or the three albums that were done in the 70s, like, they define the time, you know? And you know, there was stuff going on earlier, obviously, and I don't know exactly on the timeline who your contemporaries were, but for me, that was like, that was rock music at the time of that, of 1976 or whenever that came out. That was huge rock music.
Yeah.
Well, who were you guys listening to? I mean, who were your, you know, what was driving you? Were you guys playing covers? Where was your head at?
Well, we were playing covers and trying to learn how to write songs, but we were listening to a lot of Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
You know, Deep Purple.
Makes sense.
Beatles. Yep. Stones.
Yeah.
All the singer-songwriters from Laurel Canyon. You know, Joni Mitchell. So all of those elements were just part of who we wanted to become.
But that folk mixed with the rock, that's real Zeppelin-y, right?
Yeah, it is.
You're like, we can go back and forth.
I got to see them a couple times.
Up there in Seattle or in Vancouver?
In Seattle.
When you were young?
Yeah.
In high school?
Yeah. Well, no, I think it was around that time.
Oh, really?
But
how great was
them,
that?
Them live was insane.
Yeah.
And then they would come out front and line up their stools and just sit on the stools and do Going to California acoustic, you know.
Right.
Then they'd go back and they'd just rock, you know, like only Zeppelin could. And
that must have been awesome.
It was pretty amazing.
So you saw them like in the early mid-70s?
Yeah, when their first couple albums were out.
Oh, my God.
Live.
So that must have been such a mind-blower.
They would do like a No Quarter.
Yeah.
With the green lasers all spread out right above everyone's heads.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the smoke in the room, you know, which was swirling in the laser lights.
Yeah.
And it was so trippy and cool.
Who did most of the songwriting on that first record? Was that you and your sister?
Yeah, me and Ann.
Who came up with those riffs? Was that you? Or was that Fisher?
Well, Roger Fisher came up with some of the great riffs, too.
That's Fisher?
Yeah, but it was, you know, my chord progression, but he got the...
Right.
Yeah. He sewed it together with a great riff.
Sure.
And yeah, he had a lot of great stuff like that that he contributed to the songs. You know, they wouldn't call it songwriting these days.
Right.
That's more arranging, but it's cool. It really worked.
Yeah.
Stuff like Barracuda really worked. Yeah.
Was that you?
Roger kind of came up with that by ripping off another song that Nazareth covered, a Joni Mitchell song called This Flight Tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they were pissed.
Did he rip off the harmonics from Yes?
No, I think that was kind of his thing.
Oh, it was
really cool.
It was great. Yeah.
And the tone of that, you know, that.
Well, both of you, like, it really worked. It was sort of like a Stones sing, but that sort of the two vastly different tones of the rhythm and the crunchy lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's like, I love that shit.
It's,
everybody's well represented.
There's a lot of tubes in that shit.
Yeah.
You can hear the tubes. You can hear the dirt in it.
Sure.
Which is one of the things I love about distortion and big rock guitar playing, you know.
And how are you with the, like, with the equipment? I mean, do you get, are you nerdy or do you kind of commit to a, do you
I
have
don't
a
really,
setup?
I don't really like tech talk much.
Right. Yeah.
I don't quite kind of go, What I love is...
You're not a gear head or...
Not a gear person. But I have a Fender Deluxe amplifier and the 1963 Lake Placid Blue Telecaster.
Oh, that's great.
That I've had ever since I was, I don't know, 1980?
Uh-huh.
Or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Forever.
Yeah.
And some of those older guitars that just, you can't...
Yeah.
Get there any other way. Yeah.
So what's your, what are your go-to guitars? What's the acoustic you always go to?
Well, I designed a guitar with Martin guitars.
Really?
That was the Nancy Wilson signature.
Nice.
And based on like the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young uh-huh. style dreadnought guitars.
Uh-huh.
A three-piece back.
Oh, nice.
Really cool tuners.
Is that still around? They still make them?
No, there was a limited run.
Ah.
So now they're really hard to get.
Fortune, I bet.
But I think I have about four.
Of the Nancy Wilson Martin signature?
Yes. And then I gave like Ann one, and I gave my friend Sue one, and I gave another friend. So if I ever run out, I'll just take theirs.
Yeah, yeah. They're not using them, right? Or are they using them?
They love them.
Yeah.
But they don't use them like I would use them.
Yeah. If you're in need, they'll give you back.
If I'm ever in dire need,
so
I know
when,
where to go.
When you started to like... On that first record in Canada, so did it just blow up? Did you guys get thrown into, were you opening for major rock acts? How did that happen?
Well, not exactly, because we were still like, you know, there's a Canadian content law in Canada that if something's created in Canada,
yeah.
that there's a certain percentage of airtime that it gets,
yeah.
because it's Canadian,
right.
technically, even though we're not... We lived there. We had a residence there, and we recorded there. So we got some airplay.
Yeah.
But we were also still playing in clubs. And it's this one club in particular that's called Lucifer's.
Yeah.
Which was a kind of a real sketchy dinner club.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a disco meets rock meets dinner.
Right.
Kind of a club.
Yeah. Sure. That kind of place.
And we hated the food, and one night, you know, Ann says, "Hey, are you enjoying your Lysol-flavored dinner tonight?" And, you know, we were immediately let go. We were fired. You're out of here on your ear. And pretty much the same minute, we got an offer to open for Rod Stewart in Montreal,
huh.
the other side of the country.
Yeah.
So we get on the sleeper train, and we hightail over. A train across the country.
How long did that take?
A couple days.
Yeah.
And then we got there to Montreal and got on the stage to open for Rod Stewart. And people had heard Magic Man already in Montreal, unbeknownst to us.
On the radio.
The radio.
Uh-huh.
And they all started lighting up their lighters.
Oh.
And we were like, what's going on?
Wow.
And it was like one of those really super magical things that you just, it's like pennies from heaven, you know, you're just like, oh my God.
Did you guys nail it that night?
Well, we did because we were so, you know, we're just wonderstruck by the whole situation.
Yeah.
First time on a huge stage.
Uh-huh.
Really a big stage.
Yeah. You know?
There was room on the stage to move.
Right.
For a change.
So you got to figure
out
how to move.
You could actually walk around, you know.
Yeah.
And then these people were so there with us, and we're like, oh my, this is so great. This is like, this could be the future, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of became the future.
That's astounding. And, and in the sense that, like, you know, you're kind of thrown into that. I mean,
yeah.
I guess you weren't green, but you certainly didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't know how to work a big stage or,
Was Rod Stewart nice?
He was great. He was really great.
Because he was huge then, right?
He was massively huge then.
He's always huge, I think.
He's always been huge.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
He's been what a voice.
You know?
I love him. But really sweet to us. I was like, hey, you guys, you're pretty good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing fine already. You know, for a bunch of greenlings,
that's
you know,
nice.
Sprouts.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
And then what happens? That small label, did you have trouble with them?
Eventually,
yeah.
We were opening for more people like ZZ Top, which they would call ZZ Top.
Really?
ZZ Top in Canada, because that's Z is a Z.
Oh, okay.
In their alphabet.
Okay.
And Billy Gibbons said, hey, you're not so bad for a little girl. You know, you're going to play pretty good for a girl. And
so you opened it up for ZZ Top and the...
April Wine was another Canadian act that we opened for.
Oh, what was their big hit?
Nick Gilder.
April Wine. What was that hit?
What was that hit?
She's a roller. Yeah.
Yeah.
High roller.
Oh,
baby.
How do you remember she that?
Is. Was that them?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Pretty sure. They had a huge guy, like paper mache man. With a top hat.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Like some kind of a leprechaun.
Nick Gilder was
Nick
sort
Gilder.
Of, that was
hot
sort of.
Child in the city.
Yeah.
Running wild and looking pretty.
Yeah. But like ZZ Top, they were a band, man.
Oh,
right?
They were always so. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just such heavy dudes. They're heavy dudes.
But nice guys, you know?
Really nice guys.
You know, real grounded in some weird way. And
but hysterical.
Yes.
At the same time.
But that was, so you're opening for them in the late 70s, so that's before the Beards. So that's when they were really kind of, you know, that was like Tush and, you know, LaGrange.
Yeah.
And
LaGrange.
Yeah, and, you know. The,
yeah,
like
that's
the,
right.
Like driving, arrested for driving while blind, and like,
oh,
all
yeah, yeah, wow, shuffle stuff that they did.
That must have been a blast.
What a sound they had!
So, when you guys are working with these guys, I mean, do they treat you well? I mean, because you guys are like royalty. I mean, Art, you were the pioneers of modern rock music, of women being of doing it. I don't know that anyone's done it quite like you guys.
No, we were just like military brats who probably were young enough when we started that we didn't really have any kind of sexual identity attached to it. We were just these tomboys wanting to be the Beatles, not date the Beatles, but be the Beatles,
sure.
You know, and do more harmony stuff and do more stuff like Zeppelin with acoustics and electric and kind of crafting a sound for ourselves that was more kind of poetry and rock.
But it's interesting. So you never thought of yourself as this is girl music, this is women music. We're just going to do music. Yeah. We're going to do rock music.
We're just going to do rock music.
Yeah, it was not, you didn't feel like you had to put on a sexual act or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Until the 80s, I guess. But
those big hair pictures,
the
man.
The big hair pictures.
Woo!
But, you know, before I was in the club band that Anne was in first, she was relegated to be the chick singer and do all the ballads at first.
Right, okay.
But then she said, I want to try some Zeppelin stuff. So she tried, you know, And she everybody kind of went, oh, shit. You know, she can do that. She's in the same range as Robert Plant, so she can do the Robert Plant thing.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Because he's singing way up there.
Yeah.
And she was no slouch in that area.
Uh-huh.
And still is not. So then her whole world just opened up as a singer there that
Got
way.
It. Yeah.
So she could really rock. And, you know, not necessarily just only do ballads anymore. So when we all went up to Vancouver and started to be bigger in Vancouver, we were doing a lot of Zeppelin and we were doing a lot of Deep Purple and we was trying to write.
What Deep Purple covers?
Oh, we did My Woman from Tokyo and Highway Star, which is a really good one.
I'm a highway star.
Nobody's going to take my car. I'm going to raise it to the ground.
Yeah.
That's the rock and roll accent.
Yeah.
It's like when I saw Bruce Springsteen and I kind of grew up with Bruce Springsteen until more on the radio, and he was kind of and that's the rock and roll accent. You couldn't even tell exactly what is he saying. And then I saw him on Springsteen on Broadway.
Oh, wasn't
before
that great?
The shutdown, of course.
Yeah.
It was so good, and those songs
really,
are so
everything's so casual and very earnest.
Very good Catholic boy stuff.
Because he's one of these guys where his public personality seems very genuine. And I'm not saying it isn't, but behind that there's a bit of a dark madman.
I believe you're absolutely right about that. I mean, I know that he's suffered from some depressive stuff. And, and that goes to show like how deep the songs really can get and how beautiful and humane, his songs, his lyrics are.
You covered one. I mean,
that's why I did The Rising.
You chose that one.
Right.
What was the problem? Why that one?
Well, because once we started, you know, coming into the pandemic era that we've just hopefully getting out of soon, he wrote that one for 9/11.
Sure, I remember.
Initially,
I remember when we were in New York. It was like, well, Bruce is going to save us with his song any day now. Bruce is going to deliver us.
Oh, and, I know.
It was quite a song, man.
It's a great song.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, just having like figured out the words and the meaning and the meaningfulness of it today, with people, so much loss around us and people, you know, a 9/11 every day, you
right?
know? So,
it's a good choice. Then that was a smart choice.
And then coming from a woman's perspective too, it really changed the. I thought it really changed the message of it in lots of ways to be a lot more affirmative, aspirational, nurturing, motherly, if you will.
Nice,
So that's an interesting little thing about it that I wasn't expecting to
it's a great cover.
Get from it.
Oh, so you felt that.
I felt that.
Yeah.
Because singing about Mary in the garden of a thousand sighs, that kind of thing. It's like the mother, you know.
Yeah.
The mother of God, I guess.
Sure.
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. You
know,
if you're doing the Jesus route.
If you're going that way.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're hitchhiking on that on that truck.
Do you know Bruce?
I've met him a few times.
Oh, did he know you were covering it? Did you talk to him or did you just do that?
My people talked to his people.
Oh, yeah.
Who told our people that he really did like it a lot.
Oh, that's nice.
So I did the Snoopy dance about that because I was just like, oh. He knew I was there when I saw him at the theater for the Springsteen on Broadway thing because they knew my name and where the seat was. And
sure, so the house seats.
And we were right there, you know. And he saw me kind of tearing up and pretending I wasn't crying and stuff during the meaningful parts.
Uh-huh. That's good.
But, you know, why not?
So when you're out there on the road from the get-go, I mean, did you... Like, it seems like your experiences, at least a few that you talked to me about, were, you know, relatively supportive from the dudes in general.
No, they were pretty cool dudes. I mean, I think kind of enlightened in the way that we'd all been through the late 60s into the mid 70s together.
And I guess you had the goods, too. Like, if you're showing up with the goods, they can't really be like, you know, hey, baby. It's like, fuck you, man.
Yeah,
I
know.
See what we just did out there?
Don't call me baby.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, they were not as excited about me being another chick in the band when I finally did join, because it was like, oh, now we're gonna just have a bunch of wimpy ballads again. But no, I came to play.
Yeah,
and that when they figured out that I could play, and you know, I was already pretty proficient. And I could do stuff like some of the Steve Howe introduction.
Right,
that some of the Yes songs had on them.
You guys did some Yes covers?
We did Siberian Cat True.
Uh-huh.
We did Take a Straight and Stronger Course. Right. Your Move.
Uh-huh.
Which we just, actually, Hart just did that again last tour.
Really?
Really a fun song to do.
So you just pull some of them out, huh?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's just like mix it up.
And, make it fresh.
You know, you don't want to do too many covers if people are coming to see you.
Right.
If you do too much Zeppelin or too much other, you know, cover songs. But because then you don't have time to do the ones that they came for, which is a good problem to have. But yeah, we kind of always try to throw in a stray cover just to keep things really
lively.
Fresh.
Like, no way. They're doing that one.
What?
Yeah.
Like, well, it's interesting. Boxer. Sort I of did like, the Boxer too.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a great song, right?
What a song.
Well, I mean, I wasn't talking to him, but I heard Paul McCartney talk about that, about when he goes out, you know, and he does all those Beatles songs, and there's just a, you know, an arena full of iPhones waving up, and then as soon as he's like, "We're gonna do a new one," you just see all the phones go down.
Wah.
Yeah, like, it must feel terrible. Like he, I mean, really, the idea of that. Was kind of daunting, like that moment of sort of like, it's not really rejection, but it kind of is.
Well, there is a thing, you know, like you are the soundtrack to people's lives, and when the familiarity kicks
in, sure.
It's like a life, you know. There's my soundtrack. That's
part
my
of
story.
My life. That's
you know, that describes me to myself.
Yes,
and then there's something new. It's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
you guys want to go get a beer?
Go get some t-shirts. Yeah, you know.
But, please go get the t-shirts.
Get the t-shirts. Yeah. and a beer. But also with Paul's new album, I was going to mention because it's a really a good album.
Which one?
The new one.
Not Egypt Station. The one after that.
No, this new brand new one. Yeah. Which I, oh, it's called McCartney 3.
Oh, is it?
Because he did McCartney and then McCartney 2. And
yeah, yeah.
It's his third solo album and he plays everything on it.
And you like it?
I really like it.
Yeah. Have you met Paul?
Yeah, I got to meet him a couple times before one of his shows with his new band.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's ever the Paul with the wink and the nod. And
really?
Just
really?
As wonderful as you want him to be.
Quick, that's funny. Yeah, quick. Sweet. Yeah.
And just, you know, approachable and la la la, you know, just.
Yeah, yeah.
But Anne had dibs on Paul.
Mm.
And her birthday is like the day after Paul's birthday.
Oh, okay.
And she played the bass and she had a little Hofner bass and everything.
Oh,
so,
she did?
So I wanted to be the John person. I wanted the John.
Yeah.
You know, to occupy the John space.
Yeah.
Because Anne was already had the Paul.
Right, sure.
But, you know, sometimes you kind of veer off towards George for a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Because, when you get a little broody.
Yeah, you get a little broody. Yeah. Or like you hear stuff like Here Comes the Sun or, you know, or something.
He's one of those guys, too, where you can hear, like, he always sounds like George.
Yeah, he's had his own particular accent.
And always his own guitar playing, too. Like those.
No,
like,
he's one of those players.
Yeah.
Especially once he got into the slide stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's trippy stuff. So all the way through, you never felt any, you know, you always felt embraced by the rock world, pretty much.
The rock people, the music people in the music.
But
did you ever
feel condescended to for being women after the hits you had? I would imagine after that first album, no one was.
I don't know. I think there was always that kind of an attitude around about women who, you know, women who've uppity women.
Mm.
You know, that they're acting uppity because they think they're cool somehow, and they're not. You know, kind of kowtowing to the almighty man.
Right.
So there's always that, especially in the business area of the music industry. That's where it becomes an industry. That's where it's not even magical anymore.
Right.
It's a business over there. But inside of the business of playing music and doing music and being with musicians, it's a whole different world. I think there's a breed of person who's a musician.
Yeah.
I mean, you're one of them.
Mm.
You know, you could sit on a bus with your fellow musicians and just have a blast.
Yeah.
For all day and all night.
Yeah.
And if there's even any real serious vibes, you know, that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
That you actually really butt heads or argue or disagree to usually you just agree to disagree and you work it out.
Yeah, you guys, like, did you hold together as a band for the most part? You know, you did. It seems like you did through it. I mean, it seemed like a decision where, like, you're not going to tour, you're going to tour, but it seems like there's been a lot of members have come and go.
Yeah.
Was there contentiousness?
There was the issue of relationships within the band. That was the big mistake.
Oh.
That was your first mistake. 'Cause Anne was in love with Mike, the guitar player's brother, who was running the sound.
Yeah.
Kind of the manager.
Right.
The Svengali kind of situation.
Sure.
And then I kind of broke down and said yes to the guitar player, his brother. So there were two sisters, two brothers in relationships, which got real, real messy.
Yeah.
And I was the one to kind of break off from that.
Yeah.
But then I kind of fancied the drummer.
Uh-huh.
So that was not a good idea either.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where, like around 1980, around Baby LaStrange era.
Yeah.
It started to just diverge. And it was just too, the political climate, the emotional climate was just a little
within
heavy.
The band.
Yeah.
Because everything was jealousy and weirdness.
We should have taken a cue from Fleetwood Mac, you know. right? Yeah. You just don't want to do that.
Well, you got to learn your lessons, I guess.
I guess.
So is that in like, so after that album is where the guitarist left and, you know, everything got different?
Everything got different. We didn't add an extra guitar player. We just kind of kept on as we were.
Uh-huh.
I played a little bit more lead stuff and filled in a little more.
Yeah. And I guess on the business side, I mean, the one thing you guys had going for you, you know, outside of, you know, being great and being Heart, but it was the, you guys made hits.
We kept on making some hits.
You know?
We didn't always write them, like when we got into the 80s in particular.
Yeah.
But there was kind of a law that bands like Aerosmith and Heart and, you know, these are the L.A. hit writing song stable songwriters, and we want you to do them or we won't promote the album.
Like, like who? Like Even It Up? Was that you guys?
No, that was us.
Yeah. Like which album are you talking, which hit, like songs are you talking about?
Like in the self-titled Heart album.
Oh, that was a big record.
Yeah.
God, I remember, like, there's so many of these songs that now, like, Even It Up. I remember that was, like, was that still the 70s or was that in the 80s?
I think that was, like, 80.
That was a big song.
Yeah, it was a big song. It started out as an acoustic instrumental that I thought I was going to do, and then it turned into that song.
Yeah, it's a rocker.
Funny.
Yeah. Oh, so, like, on the self-titled, Oh, These Dreams.
That was a beautiful song.
Big song.
Written. Bernie Taupin wrote those lyrics, actually.
Yeah.
And it was the last cassette in the briefcase when we were auditioning demo songs.
Oh, no kidding.
That we were listening
That's
to.
How those guys did that? Like, because Bernie Taupin was already pretty huge. But there
with
were
Elton
these,
John.
Right.
Of course.
But he had some other songs out there.
Yeah, he actually wrote These Dreams for Stevie Nicks with her in mind. Mm. You can sort of tell when you think of that song.
Mm-hmm.
It's very ethereal
so.
And gossamer.
I think he was really good friends with Alice Cooper.
I think so, yeah.
And I think he might have written something for Alice, because I talked to Alice once, because it's interesting about Alice. There were some pretty beautiful ballads that he wrote.
He really did write beautiful ballads.
I mean, you get this idea that he's like this massive, like, weirdo rocker.
Only women bleed.
That's a big song,
That's a great
man.
Song.
So but, These Dreams, yeah,
so
that
these
was
dreams,
huge.
Like, this is not a Heart song by any stretch of the imagination.
What
but,
about love?
But it's an interesting song.
That's a big song.
With Bernie Taupin's lyrics.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wait, I love that song. I want to sing that song. So that's how it kind of came to me.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wanted to hear Heart do a song like that. Well, I guess they did because it was number one, as it turned
and
out.
That was you.
And that was my song, so... But even on the video, they kind of made it look like which one of them was really singing it, you know?
Oh, yeah? I can't remember the video. Why'd they do that?
I think they didn't want to confuse... Well, what I was told
confuse the fans?
Yeah. Which one is singing lead on this?
Well, I'm sorry. You should have been able to step right up.
It hurt my feelings.
It did, right?
It did. It really did.
Why wouldn't it?
It's
your big time.
I didn't get, you know...
The big moment. You sang the number one hit song.
The first number one hit. But then Anne got Alone pretty close on its heels, and then she felt better after that.
Oh, did she? Yeah. How was it? Like, oh, so that's Anne's that person in that
little
you know,
bit,
you had the one hit, and that was like, what are you doing,
little sister?
Oh, wow, yeah.
but What About Love was on there, and
you
know,
I remember that
Alone, and
that's when the big production, the 80s production, was part of it.
Oh, my God. There were days in the studio where somebody would be hitting a snare and triggering it to another drum triggered snare sound and auditioning the mix between the two sounds together. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and then that cover of that record.
How much cocaine does it take to find a good snare sound?
A lot of people blame cocaine for the weird sound, the compressed, strange sounds of 80s production.
Yeah, and everything was going digital at the same time.
Yeah.
And the ego-driven drug of cocaine was also, you know, nobody was ever going to ever make a decision.
Right.
All day long.
Just
talk about it.
So you guys never got fucked up, though, huh?
Not per se. I mean, we dabbled, but we were never in danger.
Oh, that's good.
We never got ourselves in danger because I think we were just too proud.
Yeah.
Too professional. Mm. We showed up on time. We never missed a show.
And also, I imagine that some of that pressure is like, you guys are the women.
You have to prove
it. You don't
want
to be all sloppy.
No, you have to. You can't be a lot of miles, you know.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of miles on her, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to look like that.
Right.
It's not a good look.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When were you married to Cameron?
Let's see, in 1986.
Oh, so like well into the 80s, huh?
Until 2008.
Wow. I think
over 20 years.
And you guys still friends?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
We got a couple of kids together.
How old are they now?
21.
That's
They're
wild.
Twin boys. They're 21.
Wild.
Yeah.
Huh?
And one of them's a really good guitar player.
Oh, that's good.
Which is fun.
That must make you happy.
I haven't seen either of them since Christmas time 2019.
Where are they?
Because of the shutdown. One's in Montreal.
Okay.
He was going to Concordia there.
Yeah.
He's the guitar player.
Yeah.
They don't let him in and out yet.
Oh, okay.
So far.
Okay.
But I get to see Billy on Friday.
Is he here?
He's in the Palisades here.
Oh, with Cameron?
With Cameron.
Yeah. Occasionally Cameron emails me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you did the music for Almost Famous, right?
Yep.
And I think I don't think I met you. Did I meet you on set?
I might have met you on set.
I was the angry promoter. I had one day.
Oh, you were?
Remember? Lock the gates.
Oh, yes. That was you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, want to buy a gate?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great scene.
It was me when I got the little fight with Noah Taylor. And you know,
no, I was there
him.
On the set.
Yeah, yeah.
That night.
Yeah.
When they broke the gate.
Yeah,
with
I
the
feel
bus.
Like I met you. Yeah.
Okay, we met.
Yep.
We have met before.
Well, I guess I did see you one other time since Sunday Jam.
Oh, my
but,
God.
But Cameron was very, very nice. It was like,
he's a really wonderful person, yeah. You know, we had a long run and a good relationship for a long time.
Yeah.
There was just, you know, becoming parents can be the thing that that wakes you up into your adult time.
Mm-hmm.
It's adult time now.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy shift for a lot of artistic type people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it happens. Divorces happen.
Yeah, of course. But it's nice that you're friends and the kids know your friends and you kind of had a good run and you respect each other, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I've still, you know, do stuff for him, for his projects. And like they just reissued putting out a red vinyl of interviews and extras and demos for the singles film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we did... I did a bunch of demos for Say Anything for the Stillwater band that we kind of created.
Yeah.
And all this kind of stuff.
I have a couple of those. I guess
rarities.
I have the Stillwater record covers that they must have used on set.
Oh, yeah.
Because he sent me the label. I don't know what label it is. Does he have a record label, Cameron?
Yeah, it's called Vinyl Records.
Yeah, they sent me a bunch of stuff, a lot of the Kozelik stuff. And,
Yeah. Kozelik stuff, great.
Yes.
He's wonderful.
So you got to be in the right mood. You can't be too sad.
No, you can't. You can't be bummed out.
You got to go in, you know, up.
Oh, so that's really true.
Buffer it.
Right. But he's a great singer-songwriter.
I think so, yeah.
Good guitar player.
Yeah, I definitely like that.
The Red House Painters.
Yep.
And
I like
band.
That. Yeah, and I like that the solo stuff, Sun Kill Moon.
Sun Kill Moon,
that Benji record, I think was the last thing I heard, which was really something.
Well, I didn't hear that.
Oh, my God. It's
wow.
It's like, yeah, you really want to be fortified when you listen to Benji.
Take
the name
happy
of the
pill.
Record. Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
So now, Hart kept making records. Now, was this? This is a question. I don't know that I ask many people, but is when you keep kind of slugging away, you know?
Yeah.
Is there a point where you think like, you know, I don't think we got any more in us?
Well, I think we reached our first lifespan after about 5 or 6 years,
mm-hmm.
which is the average lifespan of a rock band who then has to reinvent if you're going to survive, if you're going to live to tell.
And you're aware of this.
You're aware of this because you see the style change and you see the fashion change and the sound of music is changing.
Uh-huh.
and stylistically, you're not as cool anymore.
Right.
And you're kind of lazy, as you're not as burning with the desire and the inspiration to create something different and new.
Yeah.
Because you're tired and you've been on the road for 6 years.
Yeah.
And so all of it, all the hell and high water that went under the bridge, you know. And so you have to kind of, that's when we did the self-titled Heart album. We kind of petered out there for a little while, and we kind of didn't get as relevantly creative as we could have been, I didn't think.
Uh-huh.
And so then we kind of went, we have to.
You can cuss.
Yeah. We have to survive through this.
Yeah.
And figure this out. So that's when we started doing other people's songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. Uh-huh. It was like bigger.
That was the compromise. 70s.
That was the compromise. Mm. And a lot of bands were doing the same thing.
Sure.
So, you know, we weren't the only sellouts.
But, yeah.
But we were still writing our own stuff too. And, you know, and then we had huge sporting event size shows at that time, and huge like set pieces and fog and smoke and big tall
it's
risers
like Zeppelin.
And yeah, like the you know, you could run around on the stage on these risers.
Yeah.
And, you know, like be you know, make a spectacle out of yourself.
Is that exciting?
It was hard. I think it was harder to do it that way, because MTV had that, there was an expectation to kind of be like a big MTV video kind
right.
of thing, and to look the part.
But you're pulling good numbers on the road, right?
Yeah, we pulled in huge numbers
yeah.
and made huge money,
yeah.
more than before. But it was a lot harder,
yes.
personally, to live behind all that big, huge,
yeah.
the hugeness of it all.
Sure.
But, you know, there's always something to complain about. I mean, what am I, bragging or complaining, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I mean, it is sort of the journey of an artist that to recognize, you know, what made you, and then to realize that, you know, you've grown out of something and you want to or have to adapt. It's better to want to than to have to. But yeah, I guess after a certain point.
That's a point there.
Yeah. You don't really know, you know, what are you going to do if you don't do this? So,
right,
you know,
right.
and you got a lot of years ahead of you, so you kind of figure it out.
Yeah, you adapt.
Yeah. And also, like, now, I mean, I guess there's a certain point where, you know, it's okay to sort of lean on the catalog and bring people joy and, you know, and you know, have fun with the fans. Because they've got, most of them have got to be, like, my age.
Yeah.
You know, but
it's
great.
Oh, God, yeah. And there's kids that come with their parents.
Sure, yeah.
That were the original Heart fans, you know, and the younger people are kind of starting to discover Heart.
Right, but it's like.
From the 80s on, sort of.
But still, like, I mean, I got to, like, up until a few years ago, I mean, I don't know what radio. I mean, you guys, just on, still on ASCAP, there's about 10 Heart songs that have got to be in constant rotation.
Yeah, there's got to be.
Classic hit stations, if they still exist, or on satellite radio and those classic hits. I mean,
in the dentist's office, you know.
Wherever.
In the elevator.
But like Magic Man, Barracuda, all of them.
Yeah, the elevator.
Sure, but it's not Muzak. But
no,
it is,
I know. But that's what was my thing. I always said, well, when I hear myself in the elevator, I know I'm going to have made it. You know, I would have made it.
It would have been over. If you hear yourself in the elevator, not only did you make it, but you're on the other
side.
You're
over. It's all over for you. Especially if it's the Muzak version of these dreams, which I actually own. That.
You do?
I own a cassette.
Of that? Of the Muzak version?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you did a beautiful cover of that Cranberry song on the new record.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
What a great choice.
Thank you. I was riding around in the car with Jeff and just came on the radio.
Dreams.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dreams. And he says, you and Liv should do a duet on that song. I'm like, okay.
Liv
also,
Warfield.
I shall be.
Yeah.
It shall be.
You've played with her a lot, right?
Played with her a lot in my last other band, Roadcase Royale.
Where does she come from? Her name's Liv Warfield. I'm not totally familiar.
She came from the camp of Prince.
Oh, okay.
And her guitar player, who's also now in Heart, Ryan Waters, who was from the camp of Prince.
Okay.
He's in Seattle. She's in in Chicago.
Okay.
Because her hubby works there, so she's there. But I'm going to bring her to a show that we're going to do in Seattle with all my my bandies.
Yeah.
With the Seattle Symphony.
Oh, really? When's that?
That's going to be July the 9th.
That seems like when everyone's going to start going out again.
Yeah.
July seems to be the month.
It does seem to be.
Yeah.
By then, we might just be
right,
in the clear.
Like, I think we get
the variants and everything.
All the booking agents have been chomping at the bit.
Oh,
just
God,
like, when's
right?
It's going to end? It's like, are we July? You going with July? Let's go with July.
We're going with July.
Yeah.
You know, we don't care if we go all the way through the winter after that.
Exactly.
So long as it's not a Canadian tour.
Mm.
But, yeah, she's going to come and sing with me for that. And we've, in Roadcase Royale with Liv and with Ryan, we did a bunch of heart songs, too. We opened for Bob Seger.
Bob Seger, how's he doing? I heard he wasn't well.
Well, he got injured, and so we had to go off the road. We had to quit the tour. But
his brain's okay?
Now he's good.
Okay.
It was more of like a skeletal spine,
okay,
neck situation,
okay,
but old injury or something that flared back
up. See, like, you guys are sort of like, in terms of his like big time, you guys are sort of contemporaries, weren't you?
Yeah,
like Night Moves, yeah, must be around the time of Dreamboat Annie, right?
Somewhat, I guess.
It feels like it.
It feels like it was to me too.
And same with that first Aerosmith album. It was a little earlier, probably. Let's see.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Like, Dream On seems to be in that zone, too, but it feels like 76.
76.
Night Moves.
That's exactly right. Spot on.
Wild.
Wow.
Because I just think was on the radio, because I was in high school. Yeah, see, Dream On's earlier. That's 73.
Right, right. There were so many cool songs in that era. And, you know, Pink Floyd, all over the place with Pink Floyd.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
my God.
Those records are like, I still listen to, I listen to Animals. I listen to Wish You Were Here. I love
Wish You Were Here.
Oh, yeah.
So much.
I listened to the other one, the big one with Money on it. What is that one called?
Dark Side of the Moon.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah. Oh, that one.
I, that one. The biggest record selling of all time.
All time, ever.
That slipped my mind.
Have you seen the Gilmore at the Royal Albert Hall?
I saw some of it, yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
And at the Pompeii.
Yeah.
Live at Pompeii.
Yeah, I like the way he plays guitar. I didn't realize how much of Peter Green he kind of took.
Oh, yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, I never really realized that kind of minor bluesy thing,
right,
that Peter did. Like, because I noticed that Gilmore was on that tribute to Peter, and I'm
like,
oh,
that's
of course.
Right. I didn't see that.
Because Gilmore's all fucking, it's just basic blues riffs. Man.
Yeah, but he has his own
weight to it, yeah.
Stylistic sentence he always adds to it.
Yes.
When he goes, woo woo.
Yeah.
He adds that.
yeah.
Almost every time.
Yeah.
Here or there, just so that you recognize, oh, that's David Gilmore.
So there's something beautiful about the opportunity of the pandemic in a way that lets you kind of bring it all back home, and get focused on your own stuff and do it in an intimate way, you know, to get out of the kind of massive heart machine.
Yes, the big metal horse.
And are you ready to go back? Are you going to do dates or what? Is that happening in July?
That's a solo thing in July.
No, I know, but like, where's the...
Maybe with some, it'll be streamed and it'll be hopefully more than one place.
Yeah, you're not going to do a live venue?
It's a live venue.
Okay. But is there a Heart plans in the future?
Well, there's an offer on the table for Heart for 2022, which could be really fun.
How does that package? What do they say? When Heart goes out now, is it usually like it's going to be you and another?
Yeah. That's the packaging thing is like the way they always do now.
With the bands of your time?
Yeah, like Chrissy Hynde probably would be. The one we go out with next
time.
That'd
be great.
We were planning on it before.
She's got a good band, usually.
Oh, she's really good. Really good.
She is, man. She's intense.
I've always really loved her stuff.
Great talking to you.
Oh, really good to talk to you, too.
And I love the record. And your music has been an important part of my life, and it was a real honor.
Such an honor to talk to you too, and thank you for having me on here.
I'm glad you came in person.
I'm sorry I talked a little too long, too much about too many things.
It's great. This is what we do here.
I have permission.
Yes.
Yeah. Permission to rock. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Thank
you.
And
now you have permission to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Yep. Nancy Wilson, wasn't that amazing? I loved it. It was cool. You know, junior high me was very excited. And current me was also very impressed and excited. The new album is called You and Me. It's out this Friday. You can get it wherever you get your music. Sorry, no music today. Oh, wait. I forgot. Maybe I did. I think I threw my harmonica in the bag in case. Because I didn't want to. Didn't I? Hold on. No. I thought I did. Hold on. I found it. Monkey LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.